Yeah. Let's take them back.
Welcome to a special five-part Inquirer Sports podcast series. I'm Paul Daner Jr. One player at a time, I'm transporting you back a decade to a season when the Cincinnati Bengals dismissed 15 years of losing to become AFC North champs and most exciting team in the NFL. And man, did this city ever love them. It ended when Kimo von Olhoffen became a household name in the houses of tortured Cincinnati sports fans. For that year, though, the 05 Bengals entered the realm of most popular teams in Cincinnati history. This is their story. I'm Raps MVP, and I ain't going nowhere, so you can get to know me. Pay to the love of the underdogs on top, and I'm gonna shine, homie, until my heart stops. Go ahead, envy me. I'm Raps MVP, and I ain't going nowhere, so you can get to know me. All right, welcome to the latest edition of our look back at the 2005 Cincinnati Bengals. This week, my guest had 10-year NFL career, nine of those with the Bengals. He had 115 starts. He was the 17th overall selection in the 1998 draft. A core member of Bengals teams for a long time, linebacker Brian Simmons. Brian, thanks for joining me this week.
No problem. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you had 11 INTs, two for touchdowns. You forced 13 fumbles. 502 tackles. I mean, when you look back at the career, though, you know that you remember every last detail of those two touchdowns. That's it. You can tell those stories over and over again, I bet.
Oh yeah. No, you definitely remember those. So, but I think, like, if you talk to most players, they probably remember the plays they didn't make more than they remember the ones that they did. Those are the ones when you're done playing and after the game that you think about way more than the ones that you actually made.
Is there one that sticks out to you, one that you didn't make in your career that still haunts you?
You know what? It really is, and it was one, and I don't know what, it was early in my career. I don't know, it might have been like my first or second year in the league, and we were playing the Jets up there in New York, and, you know, it was a close game. And Coach LeBeau called a blitz, and, you know, like he always could do, he understood coverages and pass protection and could break it down. And I had a free shot off the edge coming off the right end and missed the sack on Vinny Testaverde, and he kind of rolled out and completed a ball that kept that drive alive, and I think they ended up scoring, and I think that was kind of the difference in the game, and that's one of the plays that I kind of think about all the time.
Yeah. It is amazing what ends up sticking in a player's head, because, you know, you have so many great moments, but you can name all the details about a missed sack from your second year. You know, I guess that's just the league for you.
Yep, it is. I think it's more human nature than anything else, especially competitive guys, you know.
Yeah, is that kind of the same way now? You've been a scout with the Jaguars here for a few years. You were named 2014 AFC Scout of the Year. You really carved out a great niche in that game. Is it the same way where, you know, you scout guys and you feel great about the ones that you found and that you got and that you sold the team on and were able to get them there and have them perform, but it's the ones that you weren't able to land that you really wanted that still kind of stick in your head?
No, not so much in scouting. I mean, obviously with scouting, the key is you want to be correct in your evaluation and getting that part of it right, but it's not – like, I never go into draft meetings or anything saying I want to convince us to take this guy. Like, what I want to do is I want to be convincing in my evaluation of him and what I think about him, and you want to get that right. But it's not about, you know, for me it doesn't, you know, if I really like a guy, he doesn't become my guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you know, it's going to be 200 and something guys get drafted, 300, close to 300, whatever it is. But for the Jacksonville Jaguars, if we have seven picks, we only need to get seven of them right, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way, and based off of what we need and, you know, kind of what's left on the board kind of determines which way you go. So I don't get personally connected to the guys. Obviously, it's going to be some guys you really like and some guys you don't like as much. But at the end of the day, once we draft him, he's ours, and I like him. And if I didn't like him, I hope I was wrong on him, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. How much do you, and kind of getting into the 2005 team topic here, how much do you compare guys that you see now when you're scouting to guys that you played with on teams? And maybe somebody who's real boisterous and loud and talks a lot of trash, and you wouldn't, maybe some people would discount them, but you love that because you saw how it worked for Chad or something like that. How much do you look back and compare to guys that you played with when you're kind of looking for, you know, evaluation for current players?
Yeah, I think my experience as a player, it helps me in that standpoint. In terms of, you know, knowing, you know, kind of personalities and characters and not necessarily getting alarmed by them. You know, the one thing about Chad, you know, Chad had his, you know, like we all do, he had his flaws and things that people may not have liked. But in terms of, like, his ability to work hard, his passion for the football game, you know, he came to practice every day and worked just as hard as the guy who was a rookie free agent. You know, you can't deny that. So, you know, I don't get confused personality with character, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't a bad guy. You know, he didn't do anything, you know, when he was playing with us. You know, all he did was come to work every day and work hard. So, you know, because a guy talks a lot or don't talk a lot, that doesn't mean he's not passionate about football or he is passionate about football. His work determines, you know, how you view that.
Yeah. That team, more than any in Bengals history, was filled with so much personality. What sticks out to you about the personality of that 2005 team when you think back about, you know, who they were and some of the people on it?
I mean, I guess most fans would kind of, you know, connect that team with Chad and TJ and the offense and what those guys did, you know, just being loud. But to me, that the best part of that 2005 season was guys like Willie Anderson, Richie Graham, you know, myself, guys who had kind of, you know, came from the bottom with the organization, winning 2 and 3, 4 games yearly, and then to go from that to, you know, going 8-8, 8-8, and then 11-5, and winning the division. You know, that to me, that's what sticks out with that team is, you know, guys like that, like Richie, like I said, and Willie, guys like that get rewarded for sticking in, working hard, and just, you know, grinding and just staying positive and focused.
I mean, there had to have been points in there where you'd been with the Bengals. I mean, you were drafted in 98, and those first 4 years were brutal for this franchise. I mean, there had to have been points where you were wondering, is my whole career going to end up where I never really get to make a run or taste what the playoffs even feel like?
I don't really operate that way. You know, I'm more of an optimistic person. So my whole thing was, you know, what can I do to make myself better and in turn make the team better? So that's the way I thought about it. To me, I worry about controlling the things that I can control. And for me, it was just how can I become, what do I need to do to become a better football player? And then in terms, I think that'll make the team better.
What were some of the specifics that, you know, we hear a lot about culture change, and which that's a big part of what happened when Marvin Lewis showed up in 2003. But what are some of the specific things that you saw that helped the culture change so much when Marvin showed up to help turn the team from what it was prior to what it became over that really that 3 year period from 2003 to peaking in 2005?
You know, for me, honestly, and it may sound cliche, but I think it's the truth, is winning football games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing changes, turns a losing culture into a winning culture more than winning football games. You can say you're doing this good and you're doing that good, but if it doesn't reflect on the scoreboard, then it's hard to change the mindset. It's hard to convince people what you're doing is the right thing if you're not getting rewarded for it. And, mm-hmm. you know, we went from 2-14 the year before Marvin got there to the very first year he got there going 8-8. You know, that was a 6-game turnaround. So, you know, I think more than anything, that was what guys said, okay, you know, if we can do this, we're pretty much the same team. So I think that's what got guys on board, and that's what made guys believe, you know, the things that we were doing, the things that he was preaching was the right stuff.
Yeah. Did you, as a veteran in really the beginning, the 03, 04, 05, that as things were starting to turn, did you have to convince some of the young players that this is not the same old Bengals? Did you feel like you had to say, listen, you may have felt like you got drafted into a franchise that's been a joke for a long time, but I'm telling you it's not like that. Did you feel like you had to kind of convince teams that the Bengals were, you know, cool, so to speak?
No, I don't think so. I think most of the younger guys that we started bringing in, they were from successful college football programs. So they understood what it was they understood the pressures of the game and more importantly, they knew what it felt like to win. And once you get that taste, you know, that's the only thing you want. So, you know, I think that was a good thing about it. We started bringing in guys from bigger programs and guys that had success at that level. And then from a veteran standpoint, I think the way that I try to carry myself, you know, the way I try to work every day, I try to be available through pain, through injuries, and still play. I think at the end of the day, that's what guys look, you know, it's what you do, you know, in the film room, you know, knowing your stuff in terms of knowing the playbook, knowing the defense, knowing all the adjustments, knowing the offenses that you're going to give, and then on the practice field and in the weight room, how you prepare yourself both physically and mentally.
Mm-hmm. One thing that really, I think, changed the direction of that 2005 team and helped take it to the next level was the addition of the rookie class, but in particular for you, Odell Thurman. When mm-hmm. people ask you about Odell Thurman today, what do you tell them?
I tell them, honestly, and I say this a whole lot because, you know, especially now with me and scouting and knowing what, you know, some of the issues that some of these players have and some of the issues that we have to be aware of as a scouting department bringing guys in. The first thing I say about Odell is I say he's the best football player probably in the history of this league to only play 1 year. You know, and I don't know everybody who played in this league, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy who was as talented as Odell, as good of a year as Odell Thurman did, and played 1 year in the NFL.
Do you remember more that 1 year, or do you more just get disappointed over the fact that it ended right there?
I remember his 1 year, you know, how productive he was, how you know, the thing about Odell, he loved football, and every day he came out there, he practiced with that energy, he played with that energy. But in terms of, you know, the length of his career, you know, for me, I'm more disappointed or saddened for him and his family, you know, because he had the type of talent that could have changed his family for the rest of their lives and everybody in his family, you know. So, mm-hmm. And he didn't capitalize on that. And so for me, that's what I think about. You know, that's what saddened me about it. I'm not, you know, the fact that he wasn't with us anymore. Like, I'm not mad at him or anything. I'm just more sad for him and his family, really.
Yeah. I mean, how much was there of guys reaching out to try to help him and try to keep him on that straight and narrow path, or was it something that he kind of hit it and you guys didn't really know a lot about what was going on with him off the field?
Nah, guys did a lot, you know, in terms of trying to talk to him, trying to mentor him. You know, Marvin and Ray Oliver, who was assistant strength coach at the time, Eric Ball. Those guys did more stuff than people could imagine. But, you know, at the end of the day, he had his issues and he, you know, unfortunately he couldn't overcome them to keep his career alive.
Yeah, it's and it's crazy because you like you said, when you look back at that year, I mean, he really did change the dynamic of the, as far as just on the field. I mean, how much did he change what you guys were able to start doing? How much was he a part of, you know, the onslaught of turnovers and what, how the defense became so opportunistic?
Oh, he definitely. I mean, I wouldn't say we changed what we did on defense.
Mm-hmm.
We just were able to do a little better because he was on the field, you know.
Mm-hmm,
You're talking about a guy, I think, you know, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he had 140-something tackles that year. I think he had 5 interceptions.
Yep.
So, I mean, you think about that, five interceptions for a rookie linebacker is outstanding. So,
yeah,
you know, in my opinion, he should have been the defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah.
And but no, he was just an explosive guy who could, you know, he could cover, he could blitz. He was a hard hitter. You know, he played with toughness. You know, he just was all around good football player.
Yeah. When's the last time you talked to him?
Oh, probably the last day he was in the locker room, maybe.
Yeah. Once he left, he kind of ended up disappearing off the face of the earth. It seemed like for a while. When you that season, it was in many ways sort of defined by Steelers games, you know, that was, mm-hmm. you guys were trying to really break through and the Steelers take it to you in Cincinnati. But I mean, that, how much was that, the win in Pittsburgh, the 38-31 win, how much was that a game that made you believe that maybe this team has the run in it for the postseason?
Yeah, you know, the one thing about us is, for whatever reason, how bad or how good we were, we always played the Steelers well. I remember one year, I think we won 3 games that year, and we beat the Steelers twice. So, but to go up there and beat that, you know, beat that Steelers team, which was pretty much for the division championship, really. I know it took, I think, the next week to win up in Detroit to actually seal it, but for all intents and purposes, that was the game right there that did it. And and that was big, you know, because for the longest, Steelers have kind of been on the top of the division, and you know, they always were, you know, competitive and a tough football team. And you know, I think to go up there and win that football game, you know, I think that was big, and that was kind of the stamp for that team.
What did you do when you guys clinched in Detroit?
Well, you know, we celebrated, but like I say, I think for the most part, I think we felt like the week, and I think the Steelers game was the week before that. I think we felt like that was, like I say, that was the game that the week before that. And, you know, the one thing that sticks out in the Detroit game was, you know, my son was born that day, so I missed his birth. He was born that morning. And my grandfather also died that same day. So I was, you know, which I didn't find that out until after the game. So that game will always stick with me. So I remember, you know, December 18, 2005. So.
Wow. So you played, you played in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Your son was born that morning.
Yep.
And your grandfather passed, you found out your grandfather passed away after that. I mean, how did you even get through that? I mean, your emotions had to have been just completely off the charts. I don't even know how you even played a game that day.
Yeah, it was. Like I said, I didn't find out about my grandfather passing away. You know, obviously my wife called me. I remember I was asleep, you know, that Saturday night, and it was about, 3 or 4 o'clock, and my wife called me and told me she was on her way to the hospital. And, so, you know, me and her kind of talked it over about what should we do or whatever. And she said, you know, just play. And so I played. And then, you know, my mom had told her that my grandfather died, but they didn't want to tell me that until after the game. So,
yeah. So did you just go back on the team? Because was she back in Cincinnati?
Yeah. Okay. In Cincinnati. Yeah.
Wow, what an insane day!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you talk about one you'll never forget. So, you know, kind of as that season goes along, though, I mean, what are you asked more about the Carson, your reaction to the Carson Palmer injury, or what the heck happened at halftime? What are you asked about more?
Well, I think everybody pretty much knows what happened with Carson, so that's not a question you get asked much. so I think, you know, it probably would be what happened at halftime.
Yeah. Is there some sort of embargo on anyone talking about? Because it's one of those things where it just seems like Willie Anderson said, I might have to write a book and just have a whole chapter called Halftime. That's how crazy it was. Is that one of the wilder things you've ever been a part of?
It was. And to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you exactly what happened because, you know, at halftime we kind of split, offense and defense split. And, so defensively we were down there, going over what, adjustments and all that kind of stuff. And then, then it kind of got a little rowdy on the other end. And, to be honest, I can't tell you exactly what happened. I could tell you, obviously, who was involved, but, I couldn't tell you exactly what happened, to be honest.
Yeah. One thing that Willie did relay was he remembered specifically walking out of halftime with you and you guys being like, I don't think we talked about anything for the game.
I would agree with him on that.
Yeah. Did that make it hard? Did you sense the team was sort of just out of their element at that point?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because and the unfortunate part about it was, we were still up in the game. Like, it wasn't like we were losing. We were up in the game. To me, the biggest factor in that game, it wasn't the halftime. It was the fact that Carson got hurt. We can't crowd with spilled milk and ifs and ands and all that, but there's no doubt in my mind that if Carson would have stayed in the game and would have been, we would have won that football game.
Yeah. When you look back at that season, do you look at it more as a disappointment because of what could have been if Carson had stayed healthy, or more of the accomplishment of, winning the North and going to the playoffs for the first time in 15 years?
Yeah, no, you definitely look at it with appreciation of what we did. But, like I said, I think most guys that's fortunate enough to play in the NFL, you tend to look at the what didn't happen more than what did happen. And for me, it would be the fact that, we got to that point and we felt like, this is a team that we could have beat and we would have beat if our quarterback would have been healthy.
Yeah. Did you, we hear this sometimes, and did you feel like you guys would have been the team that would have made that Super Bowl run if you would have gotten Pittsburgh? Or do you not look at it that way?
Yeah, I don't even know if I looked at it that far, because you would have to have been doing a lot of imagining at that point. But I just look at it, the fact that we would have, I have no doubt if Carson would have been healthy and playing, we would have earned the right to play another game. And that's kind of the way I just look at it. And who knows at that point what would have happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know it was a fun season. And really, though, I mean, for you, that was your first and, I want to say, only, was that your, that was your only taste of the
playoff
season? One game.
Yep. 10 years. 10 years.
Yeah. 10 years, one game, and then in one play into it, the quarterback goes down. It's one of those that you just say, hey, you just got to shake your head and say, I guess that's the NFL. Sometimes that's the way it goes.
Yeah, it is. It is. Injuries are part of the game. So.
Yeah. Is that a lesson that you pass on to a lot of the guys that you talk to now, and that you scout on this team, is that You just got to go out there and play and just hope it falls your way, and you never, because nothing's really guaranteed at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for the most part, that's what, guys, I think guys realize that, you just got to control the things you can control, and you go out there and you play, because the one thing I do tell guys, no matter how long you play, it's probably not going to be long enough for you. you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you play 10 years, you probably don't want, you wanted to play 11 years. If you played 12 years, you probably wanted to play 13 years. So, you know, all you can do is go out there every day. And it's one thing to say that you want to play the game and you love to play the game, but it's another thing to prepare yourself and to love the process and you know, watch the tape every day, the workouts, the conditioning, taking care of your body. You know, always say, you know, I always ask guys, when I'm talking to coaches, now, the question I like to ask is, do this guy, does he love the process? Does he respect the process?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is yes, then to me that's a guy that understands that it's more about just putting on your pads and putting on your cleats and going out there and running around on the field.
Yeah.
You know, he understands that it's more than that to be successful, and it's going to take more than that to be part of a successful team.
Yeah, yeah. Do you still talk to Keo Spikes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, do you feel like, I mean, at the time when you guys were drafted so close to each other and you played right next to each other for so many years, you probably thought that you'd kind of always be viewed as kind of a combo of sorts, but were you surprised at how much, you know, you guys were kind of associated with each other and how quickly you guys built a relationship?
No, not really. I mean, you figure if they draft two guys at the same position pretty much in the same year in the first round, that they're going to connect you together, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing about, you know, the one thing that we didn't, obviously we had a competitive competition, you know, trying to make each other better and trying to play better than the other one. But it was all in the, you know, for the benefit of the team. And, you know, I respected him, he respected me, and we loved playing with each other. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't like, you know, it was any jealousy or anything like that. We both tried to do everything that we could do to make the football team better.
Yeah. And, did you ever try to convince him to stick around when he was considering staying or leaving?
You know what? I didn't really. He had to do what he felt was best for him. And I don't, you know, because I knew regardless we were going to be friends and we, but would I have loved for him to have stayed? Absolutely. But, you know, we talked a little bit, but even after he left, we, you know, most of the time we talked, it wasn't really about football. So, yeah, do I wish he would have stayed? Yeah, I do.
He might be one of the only guys that goes against what you just said that, well, you'll never play long enough. I mean, he kept going.
He played 15.
About a long career.
Yeah, but the thing about it is he played 15, and if somebody would have called him for the year 16, he would have went back out there. So, I mean, 15 years is a long time to play. But to my point is, you know, he played 15 years and would have loved to play one more year, just like most of us.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Takeo never got that playoff game, even though it didn't end the way you wanted to. At least you got at least a small taste of it, even if it was a bit bitter. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's unbelievable in itself, the fact that he played 15 years and never went to a playoff game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Brian, man, I really appreciate you taking some time to join me. Always great having you on, and good luck to you and to the Jaguars come up this season, and I guess we'll probably see you out there on the scouting trail.
All right. I appreciate it, and good talking to you also.
And now I turn to my next guest, who more than anybody can explain the transformation of the Bengals from a franchise that went through one of the worst decades into the coolest kids in town in 2004 and 2005, and that's Center Rich Braham. Rich, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, you played 13 years in the NFL, all of them with the Bengals, 142 starts. You were there from 1994 until an unfortunate injury in 2006 ended your career. You were the second most tenured player on that 2005 Bengals team. You know, kind of like I was saying in the intro, you saw the team transform when Marvin Lewis came, and then obviously it hit a crescendo in 05. what did you, you know, did you, was that the biggest takeaway for you when you, if you look back at particularly that 2005 team, was how much it that took over the city and became this, all of a sudden, this cool franchise?
Oh, yeah. I mean, starting in some bad times and they got decent, and, you know, ending in actually pretty good times was a great thing, because once you start winning, people love you. And, you know, they want to be a part of it, and the support in Cincinnati was incredible from everybody. And it was just unfortunate, you know, we weren't able to win that first round of the playoffs, and Carson got hurt. But the support from the city, the people, the fans was awesome.
Do you look back at that offense and just marvel? I mean, do you still even now just think about, man, it was unbelievable. You think about records that were set as far as fewest sacks allowed. Carson at that point took the record for most touchdown passes. Back-to-back years breaking the rushing record. I mean, is that even now amazing how much firepower ended up on that offense?
Oh, it was incredible, because there was at times that – we were just, as a core, so good. We could run the ball when we wanted to, and we could pass the ball when we wanted to. And, you know, especially doing that with a young quarterback was incredible. You know, mm-hmm. Carson did a phenomenal job.
Yeah. When did that offense, in your mind, kind of start to become that next level? When did that happen, you think?
I think it was towards the end of training camp. You know, I had a pretty good relationship with Carson Palmer, and he'd come to me, Rich, and tell me, he said, Rich, you know, we're going to go in the huddle with two plays. You got to help me out. And I'd look at him and go, tell you what, I'll help you out, but if a corner off the edge is going to hit you in the mouth, there's nothing I can do about it, because I couldn't see him, you know. And we were on a good basis, you know, going to the line of scrimmage with two and sometimes three plays, looking, recognizing defenses and being able to call what we wanted to execute our offense from what they were showing defensively.
Yeah. And that was – did that surprise – I mean, for a young guy, I mean, that was only his second full season starting. Did that ability of you guys to function on that level surprise you that you were able to do that so early in the quarterback's career?
Oh, definitely. And that just shows you how good of a quarterback Carson Palmer was. And the thing, I was just happy to be – the lineman to say, hey, let's run this play or let's run this play. And, you know, very seldom did he ever call me off on a play. And it clicked. And, you know, I think the gel of, you know, different linemen, the quarterback, the tailbacks, of what makes an offense complete.
Yeah. Well, you know, so many things change. You saw this as much as anybody. I mean, what changed when Marvin Lewis took over? I guess, or was it everything changed? I mean, how drastic was the change in everything that happened within the franchise in 2003?
Well, to me, what happened was Marvin Lewis took over and pretty much got rid of almost everybody. And he was to the point, if you didn't earn his respect, you were gone. Because he brought in players from Baltimore, brought in players from Redskins, and brought in, you know, free agents from everywhere. And that was his philosophy. I even went through the same thing. You know, he came and pretty much told me, hey, Rich, you're going to sit back this game, and we want someone else to start at center. And that happened for one game that year. Then he comes back to me, the meeting, the Monday afterwards, and looks at me in the meeting room. He goes, Rich, you're my starting center forever. And pointed to two different guards and said, if you want your job, you guys got to earn it. And walked out. And that was kind of, at that point, I believe I earned his respect. And, you know, it was great playing for him.
Yeah, it sounds like. Was that something, as far as talking to guys in the locker room, was that something that pretty much happened with just about everybody, a meeting like that where everyone was pretty much challenged and told that your job's on the line today?
Well, I think so. You know, it's kind of weird being offensive lineman, because just the offensive line meets together. So we technically, you know, we don't go in individual rooms. We do have meetings as an offense together, but far as the offensive line, we spend a lot of time together going over schemes, plays we want to run, the execution of what we have to do. And, you know, our mindset in our room was we had to get better, and if we weren't going to get better, Marvin was going to get rid of us, and one at a time, and it didn't matter to him, and that was his philosophy.
And it wasn't, you know, because the other thing was it was not just Marvin Lewis coming in, and but it was sort of the rise of the offense was sort of the rise of these very dramatic personalities on your offense, you know, with a guy like Chad. And what, how did he change the attitude of the team? Was that a noticeable thing just because of the way that different than almost anybody you'd ever played with?
Yeah, what Chad would do, especially at training camp, what I thought was very positive, because training camp after so many days can get stale, he would challenge people to cover him. Mm-hmm. And he would make side bets. You can't cover me today. And, you know, the chatter went on and on, and not only did he make himself better from that, he made the defensive players better from that, because mm-hmm. God gave him a gift, and he was an incredible athlete.
Yeah. Well, and did it ever? I mean, I'm sure there were some days where it's like, can someone just tell Chad to be quiet, please? You know, just for one day, or was the team really feeding off of that?
Well, I mean, in training camp and stuff, it was good. Now, there was times in season where me and him got into a couple times, because he was the kind of guy that wanted his hands on the ball every second,
mm-hmm.
and he had to accept that there was other teammates on the team. And once he did that, and, you know, few of us had a talk with him, and sometimes a loud talk with him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We're like, Chad, you're going to get the ball. And, you know, you had players like TJ Husmazada in there that, you know, he was one of the reasons we were so good. He didn't drop a ball, and he made Chad's life a lot easier by throwing to someone else.
Yeah. How many talks of those loud talks did it take to finally get to the point where, like you said, it kind of all clicked for him?
Not a lot, because, you know, there was, you know, me being older and stuff, Willie Anderson being older in a huddle, you know, we had to lead this team and say, hey, this is the way it has to be. Carson's your quarterback. He's going to throw to who he believes is open and who he believes is going to be a successful play. And that's what we did.
Yeah. What, you know, that season, you guys started off very fast, obviously, and, you know, just scoring at will. And like you were saying, I mean, even in camp, you knew, you kind of could sense. At what point during the year did you get the feeling that, okay, this could be the team that makes a Super Bowl run?
Well, probably about halfway through the year, you know.
Yeah.
I believe we got off to 4-0 start. And mm-hmm. That's just a phenomenal feeling, because if you look at statistics, a team gets off to a 4-0 start, their odds of making the playoffs are very high.
Mm-hmm.
And for us in Cincinnati, that was very good, because there's several years we'd get off to a 1-3 start.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice being on the other end of it.
Yeah. I was going to say, you had a career where that was because you were in Cincinnati and the team had struggled so long. I mean, that was your first winning season. Did it have that feel of, okay, you're finally getting the shot that you wanted for so long, you know?
Oh, I agree. But you look at quite a few years there, even though you say, we're terrible. But still, look at some of the offensive statistics of Cincinnati. I mean,
mm-hmm.
offensively, over the years, we were successful, but we were giving up a lot of points also, or making mistakes mm-hmm. with an interception, and that 2005 happened to be the year that, hey, the defense was making plays. They were intercepting the ball, and it was just exciting to have, you know, technically three phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, playing all together and playing well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's crazy, because, you know, you look at, you know, the season kind of went by. The Steelers games all were very defining. You know, the first one where it was a 27-13 loss, and it sort of was like, okay, well, you haven't quite taken over that spot in the division yet. But the one in Pittsburgh, that win, was that to you, was that sort of the defining moment of that regular season, that victory there?
Oh, I think it gave us great momentum. I mean, we went up to Pittsburgh, and I think we scored like 38 points up there. And
yep.
to do that in Pittsburgh, is pretty amazing because it is a tough place to play. I mean, the crowd's crazy, you know, and with, you know, them having good team after good team for several years there, it made a statement.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, you can't talk about this season and not go to that dark place of that playoff game. But I'll just say, you know, first play, wild card game on offense. What do you remember about that play? What sticks out to you about that play?
Well, it was just, you know, a regular play. And, you know, I remember Kimo von Ohlenhofen very well just because, you know, he played with us in Cincinnati for many years, and he happened to be the one to get hit on a quarterback. And, you know, it was just a kind of a freak thing. I mean, it didn't look terrible. And, you know, unfortunately, Carson got injured. I mean, it – and I tell you what, I believe that took the cells out of a lot of players. And, but still, the rest of the game, we were very competitive. I mean, John Kinda came in and did a phenomenal job. We were close to pulling it off.
Yeah. Does that – I mean – Do you still look back on that play and just wonder what could have been, or does it still flash before your eyes, or were you able to just sort of just put it away and move forward?
No, it's something I don't think you can put away, because you really think if Carson stays healthy, how far we could have went. And I don't mean just to the next game. I'm not saying we could have won a Super Bowl, but I believe if Carson wouldn't have got hurt, we would have been in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like that's sort of a common thought that everybody on that team felt. I mean, it was just in that moment, knowing that you feel like you've got the team that can put you in the Super Bowl. How do you try to, as a captain and a veteran on that team, try to rally the troops? Was that kind of almost really just almost an impossible task to put that away and forget that?
Well, anytime you lose something, especially in the NFL as a quarterback, your starting quarterback, people don't realize how much that person motivates a team defensively and offensively on what they do on the field. And I guess that's why they get paid the big bucks. So you know what I mean? And to lose him really hurt. You know, it was still great to have a veteran like John Kidna that was able to come in. And you know what? We were close in winning that game. And but it was tough, you know, once we lost Carson. It was definitely a dagger in your side.
Yeah, yeah. Is it fair to say that's the best team you've ever played on?
Yeah, I believe so by far. I mean, far as a team, all phases of the game played excellent. I mean, you know, anytime you have a chance to make the playoffs and make a run, you'd have to say it's one of your better teams you've been on.
Really? That offensive line, when you just go down it, when you had Willie and Levi Jones on the edges and you and Eric Steinbeck and Bobby Williams – I mean, that was a line that was really as strong as it got. Why did that group gel together so well, you think?
I don't know. It just felt like everybody did their job, and there was never, ever finger pointing if anything went wrong. We went to the next play, and sometimes, you know, you can't ever think of the last play. You have to go on to the next play, and we did that time after time, and we did it successfully. I mean, like you said, I mean, sacks, we didn't give up very many sacks that year. I mean, we ran the ball almost at will. I mean, there's times we had to end the game by running the ball, and we were able to do it.
Yeah. Who was the joke at the time that always used to go around, whether the press box or wherever, was Rudy would always be on the bike when you guys weren't on the field. There's Rudy Johnson on the bike, staying warm. That's Rudy's bike. No one else gets on that bike. That's for him. When he emerged, I mean, how did he change things when he came through? Because his running style just seemed to fit you guys perfectly for some reason.
Well, we ran a zone scheme, and he was a very patient runner. Then when he saw his avenue, I mean, he hit it. And he understood what offensively we were trying to do, and he executed great. I mean, and he knew how to put his foot in the ground, change direction, and it all worked.
Yeah. Oh, real quick, I want to kind of wrap up with just a little bit of a word association for you on some people from from that year, and just whatever comes to your mind. You know, so I mentioned Willie Anderson,
Phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, but you guys played together for
11
so
years.
So many years. Was that? I mean, you talk about having experienced so many things together. You can't really replicate that, you know, that kind of bond where are you guys still close to this day?
No, I haven't talked to Willie for quite a while, and that's a tough thing about the NFL is everybody goes everywhere and, you know, and with your families and stuff, and it's hard. You know, once your kids are in school, it's not like you can just take off and go somewhere. You know, I'm hoping someday, you know, obviously, I'll see Willie again, hopefully here in the future. And we were great friends, and we had a lot of great times and winning games.
Yeah. Marvin Lewis.
Great coach.
Yeah. Well, Chad Johnson.
Crazy.
There's just really no other way to
no, I mean,
right?
There's not.
That's great. What about Carson Palmer?
Great quarterback. I love playing with him, helping him along, and he taught me things and I taught him things. I thought it was great chemistry between both of us.
Yeah. Timo von Olhoffen.
Smiling. The guy smiled on every play in his entire career.
Yeah.
Even against the Steelers, I'd look down and the guy would be smiling on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
He would be every time. And I'm like, I want to hit you so hard to hurt you. And you were smiling at me, you know.
Right, yeah. So it was hard to hold any ill will towards Chemo.
No, I mean, I played with Chemo long enough to know there was no direct intention to ever do that. And it was never in his character playing with him. I believe it was 6 or 7 years I played with Chemo. So, you know, it's just something had happened, and unfortunately, Carson, this year, you know, something fluke like that happened again.
Yeah. It's unbelievable how snake bit he seemed to have been really on the best teams that he's been on. What about Bengals fans? What are they like as a group?
Oh, I love the Bengals fans, especially, you know, you win a couple games, it's just the emotion in that stadium and the excitement was incredible. I mean, they always had your back. Even there were some hard times. And tell you what, there were still quite a few fans that, like, hey, we're with you guys through thick or thin. You know, we're here. You know, they're not fair weather fans. They come to support you game after game.
Yeah. What was that like? I mean, some of those years in the late 90s and early 2000s where you show up and you're just thinking, gosh, some of these fans are pretty diehard to be here when the team's struggling like this.
Oh, they are. But the thing is, you know, the great thing about people love football, not only us athletes, but there are many people out there, you know, I believe it's the best sport there is, and people have a passion for football. I mean, you look at the Oakland Raiders right now. When have they done anything? And even when we were playing out there, I mean, they'd have fan support. It was incredible just because people love the game of football.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know the 05 season didn't end the way that that you wanted, but is there one thing that still kind of sticks out above all the rest of it to you as a, you know, of that memory of that year?
Well, the thing that sticks out the best was probably just the camaraderie, not only of the linemen, but the total team atmosphere of believing that we were going to win when we needed to win. And that was – there's nothing else you can say about that. I mean, I had an opportunity here in college to go to 11-0 and play in the Sugar Bowl, in 94 Sugar Bowl, 93 season 11-0. It's a great, incredible feeling of going undefeated. You kind of knew you were going to win, and it's hard to talk about because everybody on the team knew in their heart you're going to get it done.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, Rich, I really appreciate you joining me. I know it's been great kind of going back over what was a year that I think. You mentioned how much people love football. I think it made a lot of people in Cincinnati start loving football again that year because it was a time when the city really rallied around the team. I think more so than any that I've seen in my time around this city. So again, thanks a ton for joining me, and hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Okay, thank you for having me.